Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio Internet and rumradio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. I'd like to acknowledge WNAH, Hoyt Carter, and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Arkansas as a public service presentation. We'd also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. Normally, I would introduce my co-host, Harold B., a family intervention specialist. Harold's in California at a convention. He does a fine work with troubled families, and I personally believe the families are the basic unit of our society, and as the family goes, so does the country. Harold does a really good work. He's very dedicated, long-term sobriety, has a great story, and he's my sponsor. You never want to go anywhere. A sponsor's like an American Express card. You never want to go anywhere without one. No matter how long you've been in recovery, a sponsor is a tourniquet of responsibility. Tonight, I'd like to start. We're going to have a special guest tonight and an interview. It's a little different than our normal format. Garland M. Will be visiting us and interviewing, telling part of his story and what he's about in recovery. He's got a great story, a very accomplished man who's done remarkable things. And I think you'll find him articulate, funny, and informative. I usually like to start the show off with what we call the third step prayer. It comes from our basic text, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I usually like to say within program principles that this is not AA per se. I use the Big Book and the 12 and 12 and regular program accepted material because the Big Book and the 12 steps of recovery are the template for all other recovery programs. So might as well go to the source. My experience is when you go to the source, you get it right from the horse's mouth, and it's the cleanest form of recovery. There's been outcropping of the 12 steps. I've tried to get it into my church. I'm in a conservative area, and I try to get AA per se in there. They have their own 12-step program, and usually I'm rebuffed. And I ask them, if the 12 steps are not a gift from God, why have you adopted them? And if they are a gift from God, why do you feel compelled to change them? I never really get a credible answer. Actually, I get no answer at all. They don't know how to deal with me. So we have to just agree to disagree on that, and they remain silent. When I have a new sponsee, and they've agreed to Clancy 7 questions, the first two questions I ask them, they're prospects. So I want to qualify that prospect. A prospect is a sales term. So when I qualify him, I want to make sure that he's in a position to purchase or to accept what I'm having to offer him. I don't want to waste my time or his. So I ask him, have you had enough? Yes or no? If they've had enough, they'll know what you're talking about. Sometimes I'll ask, well, what do you mean, had enough of what? Enough pain, enough humiliation. Have you had enough? Yes or no? Yes. Are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? That's self-evident. Yes or no? Not only are they telling me, they're also telling themselves. Some of the most important things we hear in the meetings of recovery gingerly fall from our own lips. If I get two affirmative answers, I tell them, you can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit, but there's certain things you have to do. That's a hope statement. That's what we sell here. We're selling hope from that disease. Then I give him Clancy's. I said, the first thing I need you to do is answer Clancy's 7 questions. It's on the website under the How to Find the Sponsee tab. Really good, short, succinct. It's not to replace the 4th step. You get those back, and I need those back the next day. Here's my number. Expect your call. Not all program members will agree with that procedure. It works really well. The majority of the folks that I work with attain and maintain long-term sobriety, and I'm nobody special, although I carry a certain format that I find to be very productive. And so one of the first tasks I give them when I get Clancy's 7 questions back is that I ask them to get a newcomer's packet or a list of men in a group that they want to call their home group. I think it's important that the newcomer get a home group as quickly as possible. It's the family. It's the beginning of the we. The we is God, your sponsor, and the fellowship. That's a we program. I get drunk. We get drunk. I get drunk. We stay sober. That's the beginning of the we. And for the next 30 days, every day to call a different man on his list and get permission to recite the 3rd step prayer found on page 63 of our basic text in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's also called the surrender prayer. And the reason I have them do that is that it gets them picking up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help. Oh, brother. But I can do this on my own. No, you can't. I need you to pick up the 500-pound telephone and ask for help. I need you to connect up with your home group. They get to know your name. You get to know their name. The 3rd step prayer is going to encapsulate what we're going to try to accomplish by working all 12 steps. And fourthly, when he calls and recites that 3rd step prayer, the person he's talking to might have been thinking about picking up his first drink. And chances are he won't, so he's already into service. This is the prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and do with me as thy wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. And so it is, and that's an amen. So after we do that, they're off to the races. Tonight, like I said, we have Garland M. Garland, are you there?
I'm right here. How are you doing, Joseph?
If you'd like to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about who you are and what do you do?
Oh, certainly. My name is Garland, and by the grace of God, I am sober today. It'll be, I'm going on, well, I never go on. I'm 20 years plus, and I was going to say, you know, 21, but I'm not there yet, and I may not make it, you know, how that works. I've seen a lot of guys go out who have a lot of years if they don't stay close to this program. But, yes, I got 20 years. I came into the program... well, because I was so hipster and cool, and you know, I had everything going on for me. I ended up in the doors here. It was really by mistake. I was really going to go to cash in my lottery ticket, and I was being driven there by Sophia Loren. I'm of that age where Sophia Loren really means something. And she dropped me off at the wrong door. And I walked in, and you guys were having this confab. And I thought, well, I'll hang around a little bit here and just see what you guys are talking about. Next thing I know, I'm in tears. I'm just sobbing uncontrollably. By the way, that was a joke, Joseph.
Okay. All right. I remember.
Where I got sober, let me put it this way, where I first got sober, the high roller at that place had his own Safeway cart, all right? There were a couple that were working their way up to getting their first bicycle, but it was low-bottom drunk territory. And it was the best damn thing that ever could have happened to me. I walked in there, and there was this big old fat guy. And he looked just like Colonel Sanders sitting in a chair. And all the pretty girls were coming up and sitting in his lap and tugging on his beard and laughing and giggling with him. And I said to myself, I want to be like him. Well, I didn't realize I was going to put on the weight, but I did. And he became my sponsor. He was a mean SOB, too. He had no concern for my tender feelings. He just didn't know who I was. And I kept trying to tell him. One of the things, I had a very successful, at the time, brokerage firm, stocks and bonds and what have you. And it was going downhill real fast. I was drinking it away. And he made me stop doing everything that had anything to do with that and made me go peddle newspapers out in, if you're not familiar with Arizona at all, out in a little town called Apache Junction, which is the armpit of Arizona.
I lived in Scottsdale for 15 years.
I'm living there now, and I've been in Scottsdale for the better part of my time here in Arizona. I came here in the early 70s, so, but I was not smart enough to buy land, so, you know. Of course, maybe that's a good thing now. Anyway, so, yes, I drank myself out of a very lucrative firm that I had built that had actually the terrible thing. Don't ever get old. You know, it's not always cracked up.
Whatever you do, don't get old. You know, I wanted to ask you about your sponsor, because I'm really big onto the sponsorship deal.
Yeah.
Now, you were attracted to him because of the girls.
No, he was I say that because all the girls did do that. But he, when you came in the room and he was in it, there was just a certain amount, there was a peace, there was a kind of a calmness that was in the room, and everybody felt it. It was not something you could put your finger on, you couldn't say it was this, that, or the other about him, but it was the total package. He just emanated this spiritual comfort, if you will. And I was drawn to that. I was so confused. I was so torn up mentally, emotionally, physically. I just needed some peace in my life, and this man exuded it. And I was drawn to that. He wouldn't become my sponsor right away. He was kind of a little bit like yourself. He made me go through some hoops. Now, I don't remember what all those hoops were, but I do remember that when he finally agreed to be my sponsor, I was desperate enough to do whatever he told me to do, and I was glad to have somebody to tell me what to do. I couldn't make decisions on my own anymore. One of the first things he did was to teach me that there are not 12 promises in the Big Book. There's actually well over 200 promises, and one of the best, one of the most powerful, is the one you just read, or the one that you just quoted, the third step prayer. Planted right in the middle of that prayer is the most powerful promise of all. And that is that he's going to resolve all your problems, he's going to take away all of my problems. So, all right, the God of my understanding will take away all of my problems. Now, he's not going to do it for me. He's going to do it so that my life, from that point on, will be a beacon to other people of the success of this program, that I will become an example, if you will. And I can tell you for a fact, if the promises that are in the Big Book don't come true, you got two choices. One is the Big Book is full of BS. I don't know how much you curse on your show. We curse a lot where I go to meetings. But it's either full of crap, or you're not doing it correctly, because I can assure you, I know in my life that they have all come true, and that's the touchstone. I came in because I needed some positives. I needed some promises to come true in my life, and I found here in these rooms a program that gave them to me, and in spades. I mean, it's just an extraordinary program.
You know, I was going to ask you the about your sponsor. You ever hear some people light up a room when they walk in, and some light
him.
It up when they walk out?
Yeah. No, he was the first part of that. He when he came in, there was just a piece that came in the room with him. He definitely lit the room up. Yeah. Now, no Clancy. I heard you mention Clancy earlier.
Sure.
Clancy is kind of an institution over here on the West Coast, and he was not that big into the traditions as Clancy is. He was a firm believer that it was all within the first 164 pages, and that all the rest of it was supporting material, if you will, the 12
right.
and 12, the stories and what on, so on.
You know, I have a question.
Did that answer your question?
Yes. The other thing I was curious, and recently I had read the big book several times, like most people with medium. I have 15 and a half years, so I'm a medium length of time. And the big book says we find a prospect and start working on them.
Working with, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Working
and
on them, that works.
Yes.
I got work
no,
on
I think
sure.
it says working on them, I think. I believe. Anyway, the point is that my experience was that when I early in sobriety, I went to an Austin Hilltoppers, St. Teresa's, and it was told to me that if you approach somebody to be their sponsor, or somebody approached you to sponsor
yeah.
you, you were not supposed to walk away, you were supposed to run away. And I missed that in the big book, but I really believe that was programmed. What's your take on that?
If somebody asks me to be their sponsor?
No.
Yeah,
you go and get a sponsee.
Yes. I don't ever go out and recruit sponsees. I should clarify that. I have been the way I was raised in this was that if they wanted what I had, they would come and ask me for it. I was never to force this on anybody. And forcing that could be simply going up to somebody and say, hey, you know, I'm available to be your sponsor this weekend. Give me a call and let's hook up. I don't do that. I will let anybody know that I am available for sponsorship, but I will make the choice as to whether or not I think that individual will pay attention to me. Or listen, I got a buddy who's got 30-some-odd years. And he will, we call him Big Book Jack. Lovely guy. I'm the only person in the whole damn program who can get along with him. He's nasty with the book. He will quote you chapter and verse and beat you over the head with it. I remember we were at a convention a few years back, and he asked this kid, he said, hey, do you want what I have, or do you want what we've got? And the kid said, yeah. He says, will you do anything to get it? And the kid kind of, hemmed and hawed a little bit and said, yeah, okay. And he said, okay, go cut your hair. And the kid's, he had long, long flowing hair. And the kid just looked at him. He's all taken aback. He said, why? What's that got to do with my sobriety? He says, it's got everything to do with your sobriety. If you're not willing to take my direction, you're not willing to do what I tell you to help you find your own solution in this program. And he stayed firm on it. The kid had to either cut his hair or find another sponsor. He found another sponsor. But anyway, so I'm in that camp. I'm not quite that in your face about it, but they've got to be willing to do whatever is necessary to get sober. I had to, and I know that if I had done it any other way, I could not have stayed sober. Now, this is a program of life or death, Joseph. I mean, this is not a game. Yes, sure, we're not a glum lot. And yes, we have an awful lot of fun. We interact with each other tremendously in sports and activities and what have. But the bottom line is, I'm dead if I don't follow it. I'm dead if I don't stay here. I'm dead if I don't listen to some good advice and some good suggestions. Now, at this stage of my career, if you will, there's a story going around that Garland will tell you his suggestions, and if they work, he'll practice them himself. But that's not true. I don't use my sponsees that way. I have seen guys do that, though. Anyway, next question.
Okay. Well, belabor a point, because I'm curious about that, and the way the program has evolved over time, where Ebby went to Bill. Bill went to Bob.
Right.
Bob was 3 days sober when I guess he must have took the train or the bus to New York, 3 days sober, to go get Bill D in the town's hospital in New York. So these were guys, and then they were told when they worked the steps immediately, they had to surrender at the hospital, which was the first couple of steps. They only had six steps, but you did the first three at the hospital. Then you went to a meeting. You couldn't go to a meeting until you worked the steps.
Oh, that's right. You had to have gone through the three the steps before you were allowed into a meeting. It really was very.
Yeah, and then you had to do, and then the amend steps were made within a few days, and the next thing they told you is that you got to go find yourself a prospect. You go get the guy and start working the deal. Now it seems like over time that's kind of been diluted. You know, and the success rate according to the Big Book was phenomenal. I think it was like close to 75%. Yeah, just huge compared to the way. My understanding it is today. It's become very lackadaisical, very, you know, I like to tell me what you think of this. I like to think of most AA meetings as a cross between group therapy, a self-help program, and a revival meeting.
a pickup bar. There's a club up here in Scottsdale. It's somewhat yuppie-ish. And there's a meeting that goes on there, which is you might as well be at a fern bar because that's what they're all doing. They're 13-stepping each other. You know what the 13th step is, don't you?
Oh, sure.
It's a half of the first step and half of the last of the 12th step. My life is unmanageable, and
I want
I'd like
to
share it with you. So anyway, I see the program as having been somewhat. Oh, hell, I see it as being greatly diluted from when
devolved.
I first came in.
Yeah, we've devolved, I think. It's been diluted.
Devolved is a perfect term for it, yeah. It's not the same. It's not, you know, it's not AA or CA or NA anymore. It's, you know, SA, something similar, SSA, something similar.
That's good. I like that, something similar.
Yeah, and it you know, you got everybody out there now who thinks that they have, if they can take the Big Book and rewrite it a little bit and take God out of it, for instance, they can become a guru and, you know, create their own program. I see them advertised on TV with these exclusive resorts. And so it's, come on, give me a break. My partner and I'm going to do a little self-pitching here, if you don't mind.
Sure, go ahead.
A couple of months ago, actually, it began several years ago. My partner and I, Fred's an old real estate syndicator from out in California, he and I got together probably 10, 12 years ago, and longer than that, 17 years ago. He's been my sponsee for 17 years. We got together realizing that there's an awful lot of need out there for keeping the program alive in areas where it's more difficult than others. We pass the hat, but there's a lot of houses, particularly recovery houses, that don't have much of a hat to pass, and the people that are in that house certainly can't sustain that house on their own, at least not in the early stages. So we created what we call Two Sober Guys. And we don't have a website, but we do have a Facebook page. And at the moment. We share just funny stuff. We share spiritual stuff. We share everything on there is out of the Big Book or the 12 and 12. And it's just a place for people to come and congregate and visit and share their experience, strength, and hope. What we are doing is working with the recovery houses in particular, but we will do this with individuals as well, is help them with funding. We will help them with getting the word out on their particular establishment. We will help them with management. We will help them with setting up their business plan. Anything that draws from our experience, and my spouse, she's an attorney, and she was an ex-judge, or is an ex-judge from California, so we draw upon her very strongly or deeply for the legal ramifications of what we're doing. But our whole intention here is to make the community, if you will, self-supporting through its own contributions. We will show them and we will work with them on how best to make those contributions for themselves. And we don't, there's no charge for this. If we have to do some traveling, we expect expenses, of course. But other than that, in fact, my partner is out in California right now. I don't know if he's going to the convention your partner's at, but he's visiting out there with two particular halfway houses, recovery houses, that have contacted us for some assistance, some help. And he's out sharing what we do, and hopefully, they will find that what we have to offer them will be helpful. If not, hey, no harm, no foul. We just, we're here, and we just want you to know that. That's all.
That brings up a point.
That's the end of my pitch. I don't go any harder than that. It's real simple.
No, that's okay. That's all right. I believe open-mindedness is a core cornerstone of the program, and so is contempt prior to investigation. And my all-time favorite is principles before personalities.
The thing is, don't have such an open mind that your brain falls out. I mean, we don't come into the halls of AA and check our brains at the door. We are supposed to think for ourselves. In fact, one of the signs up on the walls, think. This thing about telling people to stop thinking is counterproductive.
I like to say we're supposed to keep it simple, not keep it stupid.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's all laid out there. This is not a complicated program. I keep hearing it's a simple program for complicated people. And the reason we're complicated is we did it to ourselves. Once you start telling lies, the lies build. And then it gets real complicated keeping on track of yourself of who did you tell what lie to and what were you trying to get out of it and did you get it and did you move on to the next lie. That kind of a life eventually has to collapse. We cannot maintain a life of lies. The program has taught me that it is an honest program. In fact, honesty is mentioned 77 times in the first 164 pages. Honesty must have something to do with this thing. Yeah.
Now, in here in Houston, we've all but exhausted the ability to make 12-step calls. I checked with the intergroup, and there's a 200-person waiting list to do 12-step calls. The problem is that everyone that normally would have called AA for relief are now calling the rehabs and are being sold to get into the rehab. Now, I hadn't gone to rehab, so I really don't know. And my personal belief, and it's just my opinion, that if you're not going to go through a delirium tremor, that if you've passed that stage or it's not going to happen where there's a chance of a medical emergency from the withdrawal of drugs and alcohol, that AA can do all what you need it to do. What's your take on it?
Yes, everything. I totally agree with that. I come from that period of time where if you still had a wristwatch, you were considered a high bottom drunk. Now, God bless them. I mean, the wealthy have a right to get sober too,
and they can afford it.
Yeah, but they also it's easier for them to find excuses to go out and have another drink. Well, you know, I need to do it with business. I meet business clients at the lounge. Well, how about meeting them at Denny's? I mean, give me a break. But I was at a halfway house, recovery house, rather than a halfway. Halfway houses are different. Halfway houses tend to be guys who are just trying to pull their ass together so they can get back into society again. The halfway houses I see around here are pretty low bottom. And it's just giving these guys a place to stay and a place to recover, a place to get their act back together so they can either get back to their families, get back to their jobs, and that. The 12-step houses that I'm seeing come up now, so many of, are the ones that are $20,000, $30,000 a month. Whoa, excuse me. You know, if I could afford $20,000 to $30,000 a month to stay at this place, hell, that money would better have been used drinking. Well, that's a waste of good money. I mean, you pay $30,000 and you get yourself a book. And what's the book? It's the big book. And what do you do after you're done? They tell you to go to a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. Why don't you do that in the first place and save yourself the $30,000? You know?
Well, you know, if you took all the money in the world and you split it up among the rich, there wouldn't be enough to go around.
Yeah.
If I wouldn't have any. I think it's a mental state that somehow, some way, I could buy my way out of this thing.
Yeah. Very well said. Yeah. It's almost like I've thrown money at my problems all along. And now I got one I can't deal with, but here's a group of guys over here who for $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 tell me that they can solve it for me. And you know, let's face it, this is in a sense a self-help program. I don't like the term pulling ourselves up by the bootstraps because, you know, we can't. God has to do the work for us. But as long as we're thinking that we can do something on our own, without a God of your understanding involved, a spiritual entity, whatever it may be, I don't care what you call it, then the chances of my getting sober are very slim and none, actually. My sponsor used to tell me, if you don't get God, you just don't get it. And,
yeah.
So, anyway, yes.
Tell me what you think of this. In the AA pamphlet on sponsorship, it suggests a year of continuous sobriety before you attempt to sponsor as a suggestion. Now, I had a sponsee from New Jersey, a relapse, chronic relapse, been in since 94. And I got him and started him off again and using my little shtick there with Clancy's seven questions and all that. And in his home group in New Jersey, this is not all of New Jersey, they required you to go to meetings for a year before you could work the steps.
Whoa, before?
Yeah. People get
How many
mad
of those
when I tell them
surviving?
That.
I mean, Mike, no, that's crazy. I'm sorry, that is crazy. If you've got to go to meetings, you can't work the steps until you've gone for a year? What are you doing for that year?
Going to meetings.
Well, yeah,
I didn't
I
believe it when I heard it, but the guy is very – we're still friends today. He's a ship's captain. He got passionate finally about the program, and I tell people, if you can find a passion for recovery – you will attain and maintain long-term sobriety. When you start resting on your laurels, I call it restless laurelitis. The clock is ticking.
Yeah. I'm just absolutely shocked by what you were sharing just a moment ago. I just find that unbelievably dangerous. I was started on the steps immediately. And the people that work with me, they're on the steps immediately. I don't even hold any a truck with these people who say do a step a month. My God, you may never get to the 10th step. That's a long time to go without us. I mean, I just can't believe that. The third step in particular, you know, you got to turn your will and your life over to something, second and third step. And if you haven't gotten to doing that, you haven't gotten into recovery. That's my personal opinion. That's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
When I got to Houston, I went to the Post Oak Club. It was a high bottom place. They had the best looking bathrooms in any AA club I've ever gone to. It was all doctors, lawyers, and Indian chiefs.
Yeah.
The one claim to fame it had was that it attracted the best looking middle aged women in town.
Yeah, that's what our club up here in Scottsdale is like.
And
the Gucci. Gucci
yeah. Gun. And they were doing the Step a Month Club. And I went in there and, raised hell. Of course, they didn't like what I had. You know, the new guy coming in from somewhere else telling him how to run the railroad is always not taken with much favor. You know, what do you know that we don't know? And who are you to tell us what we've been in business a long time? And I believe the reason they did that was because of that suggestion in the pamphlet asking for, you know, 1 year sobriety before you could sponsor. So now it makes sense. Okay, well, if I drag this thing out for a year, at the end of the year, now the guy could go sponsor after we finish working the steps. And I'm going, that makes no sense at all.
No sense. Here's the thing. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to jump in on you. But here's the thing. I'm at a meeting, and it's my second day, and I'm sitting there right next to a guy, and it's his first day. And he turns to me and says, what the hell is this all about? And I start sharing with him. I'm sponsoring him, in a sense, by sharing with him my experience of an extra day. They didn't, Bob and Bill, Dr. Bob and Bill, you mentioned Abby earlier, and before that, there's Roland Hazard. You know,
yeah,
if Roland Hazard hadn't have talked to Abby, this whole thing wouldn't be here. And that's all a God thing. Roland is the one that is talked about in the with Carl Jung. Who was supposed to be helpless. He was an alcoholic of the helpless variety. And each one of us reaching out to another person is, in effect, sponsorship, however limited it may be. An official sponsor is somebody that you sit down with, like with my sponsor, somebody you sit down with and say, hey, I want what you got. Would you show me how you got it? And they take me through the steps formally. But to wait to take the – no, that's killing a lot of people.
Oh, I agree 100%. I really believe that the program's been, convoluted to just unbelievable. You know, how soon can I sponsor? I have it on the website. They have it from a 1950 grapevine. A fella came in with 1 day and went on a 12-step call, and it benefited both parties.
Exactly. I may never get you sober, but I'll keep myself sober one more day if I go out and start 12-stepping you. You know? Now, my understanding of what you're reading, and I don't have that pamphlet in front of me or near me, but my understanding of that was that you needed a year before you were able to sponsor, but that meant a year in the program after the 12 steps, And it also really was in the way we read it out here, or the way we use it out here, it was implying that, hey, you know, you can't lead a group. You can't be, we don't let people speak at a meeting until they've got at least 6 months. And there's the reason behind that. It's a logical one. Hey, when I first got in the program, I could tell you what was wrong with you. I could explain everything about this program. I didn't know it worth a squat, and anything I would have said would have been garbage. But I was wise enough, or I was smart enough, I thought, to be able to cure everybody. And everybody who comes into the program has a little bit of that in them. The ego. The ego is what got us here. And that ego does not get killed and broken down overnight. That part of it, yes, I can agree. If you remember the movie 28 Days, there's a cute little piece in there, and this had to do with relationships, where they told the guy, you know, he could have he wanted to know when he could have a relationship, and they said, well, get himself a plant, and if the plant lived for a year, then he could get himself a pet, and if at the end of a year the pet was still alive, then he could consider having a relationship, because we alcoholics will kill everything around us, and it's good advice. But as far as doing the steps, I can't buy that. You've got to do the steps as soon as you're capable of doing them. Even if the first time through the steps, and it's usually the case, first time through the steps, you don't know what the hell it is you're doing. But you're taking direction, and you're following the advice of someone who has some time in the program, who has a certain amount of recovery. You know, the program does tell us that we will recover in this thing. We're going to recover from the hopeless state of mind and body. So there is recovery. It does occur. And so that first time through on the steps is really precursory, because we don't know what it is we're reading. We don't. There's no depth to it. But at least we've taken the action. We've taken the steps on the steps, if you will. I tend to wax on. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, it's all right. It's your interview. I have so many words and so few thoughts, so it's okay to listen.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
This is what I use as a criteria. I'd like your feedback on it. I work with my sponsees. I tell them we're going to try to get through all the steps in 30 to 45 days. Usually it doesn't work that way. It's a goal. This way we know how much time we're going to spend. It gives them hope. That's what we're selling here, folks. We're selling hope from a hopeless state of mind, body, and spirit. So you give them hope that they're going to get well, and they're going to get well sooner than later, because we are Americans and we have a God-given right of immediate gratification.
I mean, yes. Yeah.
So I want to tell this guy, this is going to be quick and it's not going to cost you $50,000. How's that grab you? Matter of fact, you don't have to pay me anything. All I'm going to ask you to do is to pass it on. That's the way you pay me back. Let's get started. So, what are the questions? Do you have a sponsor yourself? You've worked at least the first five steps until we've talked with complete candor of our conflicts and had listened to someone else do the same thing. We still didn't belong. Step five was the answer. It was the beginning of true kinship between God and man. We will be amazed before we're halfway through. Step nine is before halfway, but a lot of the ninth step promises are found in step five. I tell folks, if you haven't spoken a fifth step and you haven't heard a fifth step, who hears a fifth step? A sponsor. You still didn't belong. You're just circling the field waiting to run out of spiritual gasoline. I tell my sponsees, I prefer that you know sharing in the meeting until you've worked step five.
Right.
Now, not only can you talk to the – no time limit. I got no time to say you got to be 8 months, 10 months. I know 20 guys that never worked a step. What good is the time to me with that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I want to know the steps. Steps work. That's all I need to know. If they won't work properly, we can work them again, but have they been worked at least cursory? Okay, so now step five, you have to stay one step ahead of your sponsee. And as we continue, And that's the only criteria? Otherwise, we continue working the step. None of them really want to do it. There's always an excuse not to sponsor because it takes time and effort. Like the real world, 20% of people are doing 80% of the work. You've read your fellowship basic text. Oh, the other reason I don't want them to talk is because I use the pain as fuel to get them through the steps. Once the pain is gone, the fuel is exhausted. If you can get them through to the sixth step before the fuel is gone, which is usually what happens because the fifth step is the beginning of a true kinship between God and man, the pain's gone. God's in the program now. Oh, brother. How about a sixth step? I'm sober. Is that enough? So I found that get them to a quick six. You're more than halfway through. The human condition is, okay, it's closer to the end than back to the beginning. You've read your fellowship basic text, you've read the big book, you attend meetings regularly, and you are working the steps. You've had a spiritual experience, you're in the process of a spiritual awakening, and now you're available to be a temporary sponsor. All sponsorship is temporary, either for a day or for a lifetime or anywhere in between. Let's get back to the steps. Your take?
Yeah. I'm totally into that. Yeah, I don't have a single quarrel with what you said. I'd love to have one, but I don't.
Well, look, we have to keep this going. Yeah. Come on. You know, it's funny you mentioned.
And it says that there is a requirement for this program. This is not for everybody, and it tells me what the requirement is on page 60. And I said the first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Well, most of us who walked in through that door the first time were not like me trying to cash a lottery ticket. Most of us who were able to crash through that door, our lives were unmanageable. And we needed to find some management. That's what these 12 steps help us to do. It helps us to find a manager, you know, God of our understanding, and then, to follow that direction. Many people follow a particular religion. That's all well and good. I particularly found my, if you will, I don't like to use the term, but I have found my religion within AA itself. The spiritual part of this program, there is no spiritual part. This program is spiritual. And my going to meetings and my meeting with other alcoholics and my meeting with we were speakers at a meeting last week of Indians, alcoholic Indians who had just been released from prison, and it was their halfway house. Talk about feeling like George Custer.
But
it turns out that my wife is part Indian. She's Cherokee and something else. So I felt at least I had a kin. But this is what we're supposed to do. We bring it to the lost. We bring it to the people who have a need for a spirit in their lives, whether it be the Great Spirit, whether it be Jesus Christ, whether it be Buddha, whoever or whatever it may be. It's the same God, just a different name. Give me a break, you know? They used to call me Doc, D-O-C. I answered to that because I looked like and I acted like a doctor. They call me, what is the other name they call me? But anyway, my name, I think I mentioned this to you earlier. I go by Garland, but
right.
Garland, I found out about, and I'm 70 years old, I found out just about a year ago or so that Garland is not my first name. And I didn't know that, for God's sake, I'm 70 years old. It turns out in my birth certificate, it's not even on there. My mother had called me Garland since when I was a baby, And so I just assumed that was really my name. My real name was actually what I thought was my middle name. You know, so it's Garland William Henry Kieran Michael McDonald. And I don't mind giving my last name because, by the grace of God, I am sober today, and I want people to know that.
I usually give my last name.
I don't know where that came from or where we're going with that part of the conversation, but there it is.
All right.
Oh,
you know,
I do want to give one more, if you will, a little tug on the two sober guys. I urge anybody to go up there. There's no website. It's just a Facebook page. If they have a need of any kind, financial, management, organization, anything along that line, please go up there and just. Give us send us a message, and my friend, my partner, or I, or either my partner or I will contact you first, and then we'll find out what your needs are. Sometimes it's a matter of needing a proper zoning for a halfway house. Sometimes it's the real estate transaction itself that you need help with, or it may be the setting up the structure of a halfway house. And I am I'm a firm believer in halfway houses, Joseph, because they tend to help the people who are most in need in their early stages. We had a concept a couple of years ago for a pre-way house, and it was designed for criminals who had committed their first offense and were not violent criminals. Usually those types of criminals turned out to be alcoholics or drug addicts. And instead of sending them to prison, they would send them to this pre-way house, which we call PASO, PASO Community, which was Prison Alternative Solutions. And they would stay there instead of doing their time in prison. The purpose of it was that they could stay with their families, they could stay productive citizens in the society, they could have a job, they could pay taxes, you know, and they could give back to the community. We never quite got that one off the ground, but the halfway house does serve a purpose. The recovery houses or another matter altogether. And, you know, if a guy can or a gal can afford to pay the $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 to stay there, God bless them. But, you know, when I first came in the program, and I was fairly wealthy, but I was losing it all. I was losing it all right then. And, you know, I wasn't about to. I would never have even dreamed of giving $5,000 or $10,000 to get sober. Hell, I didn't think I had a problem. No, I wandered into the rooms of AA. I hate to say this, but I was 13 stepped in. There was a girl I was seeing, and she was in the program. She had 12 years at the time. God, she's got to be almost 40 years sober now, 30-some-odd years sober. I used to go to hang out with her. That's what originally got me in the doors. Then when I realized I had a real problem, I at least knew where to go. And then I wandered in and I ran into Billy Goat John, who was my sponsor. And God bless him. I love him dearly. He's passed away many years ago now, but he is he's the most significant person in my life. He changed my life. He saved my life.
Did you want to give the office phone number just in case?
Yeah, sure. 888-501-2646. Now, 888-501-2646 is actually the phone number to my coin business. But I'm not peddling coins here. That's the number for us to get together on the two sober guys. Would prefer that folks go up to the Facebook and contact us from there. That way, we can have a dialogue going on and remain anonymous. Okay?
Thank you. One point, you said about lying. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. to those who cannot or will not give themselves to this simple program. There are such unfortunates. They seem to have been born that way.
Isn't that amazing?
It's amazing. And there's two who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. But they, too, can get well if they have the capacity to be, listen for this one,
honest. Yeah, yeah.
That's all
like I say, honesty, and honest is mentioned 77 times in the first 164 pages. So they must. It must mean something.
I was with my granddaughter over the weekend, and we had a situation, and we're talking about lying and about what truth is. And so I'm a Christian, and Jesus is my higher power. And there was a time when Pontius Pilate asked Jesus, "Who are you?" And he said, "I'm the way, the truth, and the life."
Right.
And Pilate then asked them, "What is truth?" And so Jesus had answered the question before it was asked. So I told my granddaughter, I says, "It works this way with truth." I says, "Truth is bitter to the taste and then gets sweet in your mouth. A lie is sweet to the taste and then sours. She's 8 years old. She's really profound. I work with him a lot. The scripture says, small children will be given words that confound the wise and the learned." I tell her that no matter what, you always tell the truth because that's who you become. I always tell Claire, she turns around, she's 8 years old. Her mother died from an overdose. And so I never had a chance to make an amends to my daughter. So my amends is a living amends by being the very best grandfather I can be to her daughter.
Yeah, yeah, that's beautiful. And I relate to that. My granddaughter just joined the Army, as a matter of fact. He just got out of high school, went into the Army, is going into the Army, rather. And her mom, my daughter, has never gotten the message. And she's out there, smoking and doping, and she lost her kids because of it. Mm. This is a cruel, vicious disease. But there is always a chance for redemption. In this case, my granddaughter, she's just an amazing young girl. And it's such a pleasure to watch her grow and see her not be affected by the crap that her mom was affected by, which no doubt was precipitated by my own distance when I was raising her mom. I was there physically. But I was never there mentally or emotionally or even spiritually for my daughter or my son. I had to have that drink. That was more important than a bedtime story or whatever. So,
Claire will always ask me, she goes, "Papa, how do you know all these things?" And I would say, "I have a library card." And that's usually my stock answer. So we were at NASA. We were NASA, Johnson Space Center, about a month or so ago, and she asked me a question, and I said, she just turned 8. I says, "I don't know, Claire." She says, "What's the matter, honey? Lose your library card? Huh?"
Ah, that's great. Yeah, I love that.
I'll ask her, "Claire, what's I go, "Claire, what's death to the ego?" That would be ridicule, Papa.
kids will pull our cover every time. Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for the point is to be honest, to work an honest 12-step program.
Look for the promises. There's got to be a reason to hang around here. And once, as you mentioned earlier, once the fog is lifted, now what? Well, now, go looking for those promises. There's over 200 of them. Yes, the 12 are the ones we talk about, but they're just the tip of the iceberg. My favorite, as I mentioned, is what you start the program with, the third step prayer. Right dab in the middle of that darn thing, it tells me I'm going to have victory over my problems. That's powerful stuff.
Thanks, Garland.
We just have that victory so I can share it with others, not because of me.
Thank you. We're just about out of time. I wanted to thank Garland. Thank you for coming on the show. I think it was lively, and I think we got some good information out. Points to ponder for sure. We're in 100, Rum Radio is in 141 foreign countries, including Mississippi, 2,430 towns, cities, and villages, and about 155,000 hits to the website. I got a note on Facebook from some guy who does a radio show in South Africa, and he says, oh, yeah, I've been aware of Rum Radio for quite some time. I know this is a good work. I had one fellow I gave a Rum Radio card to, and he said, oh, you gave me it 6 months ago. I gave it to my sponsor, and it's all over Dallas. I says, great. He says, you know that part where you have suicide is also the sincerest form of self-criticism. It's a permanent solution to a temporary problem, and it's also considered a slip. He said, when I read, it was also considered a slip. That's when I decided not to kill myself. I know it helped one guy.
You know you helped one guy. That's right. God bless you.
If you think you can change the world, it's either romantic grandiosity or politics. You can only change the world one man at a time, and you're that man. So See you on the radio. RumRadio.org. Good night.
Good night, buddy.